Hello and welcome to Artists Soar. This is a podcast for artists by three artists. We discuss all aspects of being artists, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The goal of each podcast is to provide solutions so artists can focus on their creativity and soar above. I'm Rachel Harshenko.
Jules McCullough.
Stephanie Weaver.
You may copy my dress, but you can't have my crown. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about copycatting and what we can do about it as artists with our work.
So with us today, we have a very special guest. Her name is Kiffany Staley, and I've known Kiffany for a couple years now, and she is just not only an amazing person, but she's also a photographer, and bonus, she is a lawyer. So
Yay. She's
going to chat with us today about copycats.
So, normally, I don't get yay when people say I'm a lawyer. Like, that's an exciting introduction there.
So Kiffany's here to talk with us today about copycats. And Kiffany, you've got actually a whole class about this. You want to tell everybody about that?
Yeah. So I have a class, an in-depth, a kind of deep dive workshop that you can get access for $45 as a standalone course, or you can join my membership community for $45 a month and get access to it and a whole host of other resources to be able to take action against the copycats. And the workshop goes through kind of six tools and techniques that you can use to take action against your copycat, and then breaks down when I think A, that's a viable option, and B, when based on what you want as your outcome, when each works best. So that there is a bonus seventh one that hopefully we'll get a little bit of time to talk about today that should any day be an option for you guys to deal with copycats. And it's a great resource to kind of give you tools and techniques and resources of knowing when going after your copycat is worth the mental, emotional, and financial investment that will happen when you deal with one.
That's awesome. And we will include a link to your classes in our show notes.
Yes. Perfect.
So what do we do? So we posted something to Instagram or Facebook and someone has right-clicked it, stole it. They're using it on their stuff. What do we do?
Yeah. Step number one is take a deep breath, or maybe 10.
Right.
Because your initial instinct is anger and rage and jump immediately to shaming them on social media is everyone's first reaction.
Of course.
Shaming them on social media, while it is possible action, should be the action of last resort, because you really do take away some of our other legal remedies and potentially get your own self in legal hot water when you initially jump to shaming them on social media. So while that is sometimes your angry first reaction, it's best to kind of take a breath and start from a much calmer place in figuring out your next steps rather than jumping to that immediate kind of action.
I think that's really good advice. Yes.
I've counseled a lot of crying people over the years, and we do a breathing exercise when we have this conversation, because I know everyone's first place that they want to go to.
Yeah.
So that makes me feel less special, because when we had, I had a little copycat situation, and the first thing that you did tell me to do was like, okay, it's going to be fine. Just breathe. and then like her next thing was like, you got to consider, is this worth it?
Right.
Yeah. And so that led to a whole new conversation with us. So it was really interesting.
Exactly. Because the outcomes I can get as an attorney are not teach someone a lesson. I can't, make someone understand copyright law and promise never, ever, ever to copy anyone again. And that they have learned their lesson and will never do it again. The legal remedies are basically getting them to stop it. Maybe depending upon if it's a, bigger box retailer, we can get them to destroy the product. More likely we're going to, negotiate a retroactive license so they keep selling it and pay you money.
Right.
Or we can, have them give you money. That's really the only options I have, legal remedies that we have, legal outcomes we can get is, you know, having them stop doing what they're doing, having them pay you money, or having them, you know, continue to sell the product with some sort of retroactive royalty for, you know, continuing to sell. There's not necessarily the, you know, teach you a lesson, you know, beat you down kind of thing. And, you know, really there is no winner. I have never had a client where this goes beyond, you know, a letter or two that's, you know, really walks away from this situation feeling like, oh, that was, I won. I got, you know, it's, you know, it always comes with trade-offs. There's going to be mental and emotional and maybe lost sleep and those kinds of things, even if you do get the outcome you want at the end. So right. There's really never a like clear cut win when it comes to this, because there is the mental and emotional and sometimes creative block that comes along with dealing with these situations.
Well, what do you tell those artists out there? You know, I've got artist friends that don't post stuff because they're afraid of it being stolen, or don't have a website because they're afraid of it being stolen, or the other artist that is posting stuff. What would you recommend to them to help? Obviously, you can't eliminate copyright because someone can screenshot it and redraw it themselves or something, but are there actions that they can take to try to avoid their work being stolen?
So there are things you can do to put yourself in a better position when that happens. But, you know, to the artists who don't want to post their work online because they're afraid of it being stolen, you're shooting yourself in the foot, period. You are decreasing your revenue. You're decreasing the chance for that person who wants and will love your art to ever see it. And so you are harming yourself more and those people who your art will bring tremendous joy to, you are hurting you guys, those two groups, more than you are ever hurting your copycat. So my suggestion is never keep your work offline in fear of it being copied.
That's great.
What you do is you do the things like registering those things with the U.S. Copyright Office. Registering with the U.S. Copyright Office is a prerequisite for a lot of the remedies that we have. And registering your work before your copycat strikes actually means that your copycat has to pay your attorney's fees. So it gives you a lot more ability to go after copycats and to make it at least a financial wash when you go after them, and actually even have that be a viable option. So copyright registration really is one of the things that should be part of a working artist's regular work process, you know, because that is going to give us the most options.
And you do go over that in your class, how to do that in detail.
So it's a separate course.
You have something for that. Yes,
is a separate course. It's
because it's so important.
It is. And it's one of those that there are so many like little teeny legal things. Like there's one checkbox if you check on the application that will cost you hundreds of dollars.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. So you don't want to check that box. And the course, I say, don't touch anything on this page.
Yeah.
Hit next. Don't do anything on this page. There are strategies to making sure you're getting the most bang for your buck when you register your copyrights. You know, if you register copyrights before what is called first publication, which is when you put your piece out into the world, you put copies of your work out there, and it can be distributed further, or you're saying, I'm offering prints of this for sale, for example. Once you do that, we are limited in what other works we can put on that same copyright registration application. Okay. If you do it before we put that out there, then we have a lot more options as to what we can bundle together so that you're getting the most bang for your buck. And we cover all of that in the course because it is, you know, copyright registration can get very expensive. And so the more we can, you know, give you the tools and resources to reduce that cost and make it the most effective, the best.
That's a key point. That's a big point. And I hope everybody just wrote that down because to do it before you put it out there.
Yeah.
Most definitely. I love that.
Hey, you had a question.
Yeah. Cause it kind of goes, my question kind of goes along with that. So I know Julie and a number of our listeners and members of Positive Painters, they're all like digital creators. So they actually, you know, manipulate watercolor, original watercolor artwork, move it into Photoshop and then create or Illustrator and create these patterns and digital designs, then upload them to like Redbubble or Society 6 and stuff like that. So what I'm hearing and kind of gathering from our discussion here is they kind of need to slow the roll a little bit on that and publish after they've registered with the trademark or registered with the copyright office.
Yeah. So, you know, so it kind of, so, you know, when we go from, you know, original painting to surface pattern design, mm-hmm. there is the potential that that turns into a kind of what's called a derivative work. So depending upon what, if you're only taking one element from a larger painting and then turning that into a repeating pattern, surface pattern design, that might be a derivative work and we might be registering that as a separate thing than the original painting. So you might have that original painting that you offer prints of for sale, and then you've taken an element of that and turned it into a repeating pattern. And we might then register that repeating pattern as a derivative work of the original painting. One great thing with surface pattern design is colorways. Each colorway doesn't have to be registered. You only have to register it in one colorway. And then all the other colorways that you do aren't considered a new application with U.S. Well, Copyright Office.
Oh, that's really good. Especially for pattern design. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one thing sometimes, you know, it kind of all depends. You know, we have also the thing of like, someone, you know, creates, you know, takes a larger thing and turns it into a calendar. You know, like there's lots of times that we're taking something that we've created and then, you know, turning it into something else. You know, with people like Stephanie and I that create, you know, written content, there's also that like ebook versus blog post versus, you know, in-depth kind of chapters book kind of thing of when does all of those turn into something new that needs to be re-registered. And we just reference the prior registration for the other work. And so, you know, there's, you know, often expect, you know, when we think about the process of making sure we get even the most bang for our buck from each of our creations, right. You know, oftentimes that means we're turning them into slightly different mediums. We're turning that blog post into a, you know, video, and then we're pulling the audio out of it. And then we're, you know, we're doing all of these things so that we can get the most bang for our, you know, creation buck, basically. And that then can result in little different pieces that may or may not be protected by our original copyright.
Wow. Oh, wow. I didn't know it was going to be, I mean, there's a lot of layers to it. Like you were saying, if you've written something or you have a class.
Even when we talk about certain pieces, like, you know, one thing that's not protected by copyright is like things that are like facts, and you know, the proportions of a bear can't be protected by copyright because everyone needs to draw a bear with the appropriate proportions. Often with any work, there are multiple layers of things that are protected and things that aren't protected. So, yeah.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
And I guess you cover most of that in your copyright class of
So in our community, we've got, you know, lots of all of these pieces are covered in different ways. In the copyright registration course, we talk about what pieces are and aren't protected and when you need to re-register and those kinds of things. That's a really in-depth, I want to say there's like 30 something modules in that course. Some of what is because like each screen of the copyright registration application, I take you through it screen by screen. So you know exactly what to do on this screen.
Oh, I love that.
And then sometimes there's variations. Like if you're registering photographs, you have some different things than if you're registering, you know, this or that or the other. So we talk about you know, different things you might be registering and then how you would handle it.
Yeah, I like that.
So one of the funny things is I'm actually in Kipney's community and I think I actually bought your copyright class because I'm not like a, I'm not the expensive a month, like the 45, it's only like $45 or something.
It's only 45 a month. Yes. Yes.
But so anyway, I still haven't taken the class, but it's there for me when I need it. And I know. So, and I love Kiffany's community because like every now and then I just got like a random question. I even forget the last one that I asked you, but I'll have like random questions that I can go in there and search the community because nothing that I really think of is probably original and somebody else had the same question and Kiffany has responded in some way. Mm-hmm. Or somebody else responded in some way. So I absolutely love their community for the support that it does give us artists. Because, you know, those 2 o'clock in the morning random questions that pop in your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect.
Well, that's
I don't reply to tell normal business
hours. No. Right. Yes.
I'm not getting pinged at 2 o'clock in the morning. I will answer you in the morning when I wake up.
But I can do that and then go back to bed because I know in the morning at some point I'll get
there'll be an answer.
Right, exactly.
So say it is just one artist from one artist and you know that they kind of took your work. Do you recommend the best kind of course of action is just to reach out to that other artist and have a discussion with them?
So it depends on what you want. If it is a digital only, if someone is posting it on their website and your desired course of action is for it to go away off the internet, then the DMCA is your best tool. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act takedown notice is a totally free thing that you submit not to the artist themselves, but to whoever is hosting the website. So if it's on Facebook or if it's on Pinterest or if it's on Redbubble or if it's on Etsy, you submit it to them. If it's on their website, then you submit it to whoever their website host is. Is it a Squarespace site? Is it a, you know, a Bluehost, you know, something like that, GoDaddy? You submit it to them. And then as long as you tick all the boxes, which most of these companies have forms that you just fill out so that you tick all the legally required boxes, within 24 to 48 hours, usually that is just gone from the internet. They will have the opportunity to say, actually, no, I do have the rights to that content and it should have been, it's really mine and it's okay for it to be posted. And then the host has to put it back up. And then as the artist who feels like you've been copied, the only remedy right this moment is go to federal court. Within the next month, you know, by June 25th, 2022, at the very latest, we are going to have a brand new remedy for creatives, which is what's being nicknamed the Small Claims Copyright Court, which is going to be hosted by the U.S. Copyright Office. And one of the things they will be able to handle is these, what's called the DMC counter notice, where I submit a DMCA to the host, the person who's got the content, posted the content, says, no, I really have permission for this. And then the host has to put it back up. Then you will be able to go to the Small Claims Copyright Court and battle out if it should have been posted or not and who has the rights to it. And that will be available no later than June 25th of 2022.
That was my next
crossing
question.
My fingers any day. I am on the like, tell me as soon as claims are opened because I am filing a claim as soon as it's open for a client. I'm crossing my fingers. It's like any day it should be live. So.
Well, that was my next question is how many of these claims do we have? And apparently it's quite a few if they're opening a brand new court.
So the problem with federal court, which is currently your only remedy to sue for copyright infringement. You can't sue in your state court. You can't sue in your state small claims court. The only place you can currently sue for copyright infringement is federal court. And even just in getting an attorney and preparing filing fees and all of that kind of stuff, it's quickly adding up to 5-6 figures. And so it really is for most creatives, if you don't have a copyright registration, it really isn't an option, especially fellow creatives against each other, because what you would ever be able to win and collect from that person is such a small amount that you're not going to ever cover what your costs are. So for a lot of, probably for at least maybe 10 years now, there's been a push for Congress to pass what ended up being called the CASE Act, which is the one that put this, the Copyright Office gave, authorized the Copyright Office to create the Small Claims Court. One of the downsides, which is a legal necessity in order for it to be constitutional, is it's voluntary. So I, as an artist, can file in that court, and the person who copied my work, the copycat, can say, no, I don't want to have it judged by this small claims court. And then my only remedy is back to federal court. Since it's not open yet, we don't know how many people are going to say, nope, I don't want to deal with it. But that is, well, a lot of creatives are very upset about that. Us in the legal community know that in order for this court to actually be constitutional and for it to work, it has to be voluntary. That is one of the downsides. But we'll see. If it really is what we hope it is, which is going to provide opportunities for a lot of these creative versus creative or creative versus small business, you know, less than $1 million business could really make it so that it doesn't feel like I have no remedy, mm-hmm. which is what it feels like to a lot of creatives right now, understandably.
So I've got another question. At what point should a artist actually engage with a lawyer? Because one of the things that I'm kind of getting is, you know, we can go through this course and, you know, have enough information where we could submit our own copyright information. And then I guess at what point do we actually need to involve a lawyer?
So I would say that needing to involve a lawyer is more a situational thing than anything else. So if you're dealing with a big box retailer, if you're dealing with a company that has financial resources, and you have a registered copyright, then you are much more likely to be able to have an attorney who takes the case on contingency.
Oh, okay.
Means that you're not paying the attorney up front. And the reason that is because if you have a registered copyright and you've registered your copyright before your copycat strikes, then you fall into one of our magic windows, which I like to call, which is that the copycat has to pay your attorney's fees and costs. And so an attorney knows when you've got a big box retailer, which a lot of those big box retailers have what I like to call the slush funds of, they know they're ripping off people's work and they just have a pool of money that they are willing to pay out if they get a letter from an attorney, a cease and desist letter from an attorney with a copyright registration certificate attached. They will just automatically say, okay, we're going to give money out of the slush fund for this. So if you've got, you know, a registered copyright, if you are dealing with a large business, then you're probably going to get more money from the copycat if you retain an attorney, even when you take out what you're paying the attorney to get that. Mm-hmm. That's oftentimes when I say it's worth talking to an attorney is registered copyrights, bigger business where you're actually going to be able to get some money. And that attorney is going to be able to push the dial as to making sure you're getting appropriately compensated.
So to add another layer, say you have like an agent for your patterns or your designs or whatever, does that give you an extra layer of protection, do you feel like, or do they still get ripped off just as much as anyone else? I don't know.
Yeah. So that's not going to, if anything, having an agent and having your work in more places is makes it more likely that you're going to be ripped off. You know, because the more, you know, if you have an agent, that means you have a good, strong voice and style. That means that you know what's on market, on trend, on those kinds of things. And your work is appearing in more places. And so the people who are, you know, your search results all of a sudden are coming closer to the top of the page, the copycats. They're going to be looking at what's appearing in the first 10 results. Then I'm going to grab that and put that on my Alibaba thing that I'm getting shipped over. And so I would say it doesn't necessarily decrease your chances. One benefit is that agents often have attorneys that they have relationships with. And when you have an exclusive license, so say you license your artwork to, you know, a company and they have the exclusive license, exclusive licensees have the ability to pursue copyright claims on your behalf. So they might have in-house attorneys that they are paying whether they're pursuing things or not. So they may pursue that with obviously consulting with you and talking with you. They may pursue that on your behalf. And so you're not paying anything out of pocket. Okay. And they're going to be recouped for some of their costs. And then they're going to share some of the money that they get from anything with you.
Okay.
So that could help there.
So I've got two questions. And one, I'm not sure if this is something that is relative to copyright or not, but with a lot of artists investing time and energy into the NFT market,
yeah,
how does copyright play in NFTs?
Good one. Mm-hmm. So NFTs are kind of like, I would say the easiest description is an exclusive license. So it's the equivalent of an exclusive license. You are saying this is the only copy that I'm going to make. You know, an NFT would be more equivalent in traditional world to something like an exclusive license.
Okay.
And so that's kind of how it would parallel. It's not a quote unquote exclusive license. So I don't know. I haven't seen in terms of service that NFT buyers could pursue copyright claims on your behalf, like an exclusive licensee, which is built into the Copyright Act, that right. Exclusive licensees have that opportunity. So you wouldn't necessarily get that benefit, but it's much more aligned with that. NFTs. And I will not do my rant on NFTs, but I have very strong negative feelings about NFTs.
Yeah, I have questions about NFTs in general that I haven't jumped into that yet. Then my second question is, there's a lot of places out there like Design Cuts or Creative Market or I can't think of another one, something Elements,
Envato Elements and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where you can download and purchase a commercial license or some sort of license to use something that somebody's already drawn out in Illustrator, let's say, that you want to use in your artwork, in your creation. Mm-hmm. How does copyright play in that?
Yeah. So when you go to register your copyright, there's a page that is called the exclusion, what I call as the shorthand, the exclusions page, where on that page you say, like, even if you were to write a book based on a, you know, story that's in the public domain, you would say that certain elements of that book that you're not claiming copyright over because it's owned by somebody else. And so on that exclusions page, say you bought illustrations off, you know, a Creative Market and you have the appropriate commercial license for what you want to do with it. Then you would say on that exclusions page that you have created maybe illustrations and text and whatever you've done to it, and that you're not claiming copyright over illustrations. You don't have to say the compass illustration I'm not claiming copyright over. You just have to say there are things in this that I know are not mine and I'm not claiming copyright over.
Right. You're just claiming copyright on what you created using those tools, not the actual tool itself, is what I hear you saying. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. And you would do that on the, as you go through the copyright application, there's that option to exclude, to include and exclude things.
So I have a third question that's popped into my mind too, is artists out there that design murals. Is there any sort of copyright action that can be taken on that mural so that if the company franchises and they want to use that design again in another location, that they can't do that without compensating the artist?
So it would kind of depend on the contract, the original contract. So there's a couple layers to that. One would be that original commission agreement. When you went and painted it, was it a tricky work for hire? That's where I see a lot of those tricky work for hires, that it's not called a work for hire, but you have actually assigned copyright to the company. Okay. So you would want to really go back and look at that original agreement. What did you give permission for them to do? There's also, you know, in the Copyright Act, there's also what comes up a lot with murals is the building gets destroyed, or a new property owner buys the building and doesn't want the mural on the building anymore, and paints over it and those kinds of things. And there are remedies in the Copyright Act for destruction and painting over of those murals. So while that wasn't your...
No, that's interesting.
It's a side important thing for muralists to understand, the VERA, what's called the VERA aspects of the Copyright Act.
Okay.
That will help. And it's been done. It's happening a lot right now in New York. The New York courts are being very supportive of the muralists in
New York. Well, that's good.
To make sure that they're allowed to document and, you know, do everything to save portions of the murals and those kinds of things when these buildings are being destroyed.
Okay. Yeah. Wonderful.
Well, oh my gosh, I think we could probably talk for another hour. You have given us such great information. And can you really quickly kind of summarize the two classes that we had mentioned that you have?
Yeah. So we talked about the How to Take Action Against Copycats workshop, which is a $40 one-time standalone thing, or is accessible when you join the Artist Courtyard at $45 a month. And it helps you decide when going after your copycat is worth the mental, emotional, and financial investment, and goes through 7 actions you can take and helps you understand when which of the, you know, each action gives you the best chance of success. We also talked about the copyright registration course, which helps you register your copyrights, feel confident that you're registering them properly with the U.S. Copyright Office, and helps you create a strategy to most cost effectively register any new work you create, so that you can do that. That's available. I'm pretty sure that one is $215 as a standalone, or available when you join again at $45 a month. And when you join at that $45 a month, you get access to everything in the legal library. It's your like go-to legal toolbox for making sure you have a legally protected biz. There's, you know, in-depth courses like how to create an LLC, how to register your copyright. There's dozens of these deep dive workshops on different topics. There's contract templates. There's quick dip ask KIF resources. There's, for those of you in art licensing, there is a database that you can go into and say, I'm putting my product on totes. What is the average rate nationwide right now for that?
Oh,
and
nice.
You can know what that is. And then as Stephanie mentioned, you have 24/7 access to put your 2 o'clock questions, AM questions in the non-Facebook community. And we even have an app that you can have on your phone. So you don't even have to get out of bed. You can just roll over, open the app, type it in, and then I will answer it in the morning when I wake up.
That's funny.
Well, you have just been, you're a wealth of knowledge, and we really do appreciate you and everything that you do for creatives. And it's just been a real pleasure having you. And we really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
So
I think we're extremely blessed to have you in our lives, and not, you know, I mean, I'm not blowing wind up your skirt or anything, but it's so true. I mean,
It's hard to find a good attorney that understands the creative art and how to protect it.
Right.
Yeah. So we thank you for everything that you do.
Isn't one who's, hanging out with her dog in her RV all day, every day.
Well, you guys go check out Kiffany today and all her courses that she offers. And we have three people here who are highly recommending her. So let us know what you think and send all your questions to either our comment page, or you can look at Kiffany and ask her directly.
Yeah. Join Kiffany's community and ask her directly, because we are not lawyers.
She's the expert. Thank you again, Kiffany, for staying with us and spending time with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Artists Soar,
a podcast for artists by artists. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at hello@artistsoar.com.
And be sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts so you can get more of us, and we can bring in some sponsors to help you and help us.